And hey, folks, welcome to the Hagmann Report for today. It's Tuesday, January 28th, 2025. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for your belief and trust in me, this platform, and everything that that we provide to you. And I hope that you leave with more information than you came with a better understanding of things, with a different focus, and with additional hope and belief that things are going according to God's plan. I really mean that. I want to thank everyone in the chat. Thank you so much for joining, for following us on Rumble. Thanks for signing up. Look, it's free. You just sign up on Rumble. You create an account and you click follow. And that's all you have to do. And you don't even have to watch if you don't want to. But it does help with us, with our metrics. And I see that a lot of people are doing that. We appreciate that. All right. So, a couple of things before I go. Tomorrow's show, I have a great guest lined up for you. In fact, I saw his name mentioned in the chat, and I don't recall who mentioned it, but J.J. Carroll will be coming on tomorrow. I had a great conversation with him today. He wrote the book Invasion. He's got another book coming out on the 18th of February called Treason. And I can't wait for that book to come out. But he has, 24 years he spent as a Border Patrol agent. And he was on the front lines. And when Biden made the changes he did, he could not stand it. And he left, and he's out there fighting in ways that, you'll be surprised to hear tomorrow. So, J.J. Carroll tomorrow. I'm going to make that announcement a couple of times during the show because, we have people coming in and such. So, Red River Patriot, happy birthday to you, sir, ma'am. I'm not sure. But Red River Patriot, happy birthday. My apologies for assuming anything. Steph, thanks, and hello, all right, I was just sidetracked by the chat. I could just read the chat, basically. Also, I noticed this as well in the chat earlier. Randy Taylor, his surgery is scheduled for next week, the 3rd, I think it is. So, he's got a lot of things to get ready for and stuff. So, that's next week. Just letting you folks know. Okay. All right. So a lot of things is going on. Eric the Tech, I did send you video 7 as a separate video. And I kind of want to start out with this, even though we have so much to get into. What's that?
Too bad.
Too bad? You're going to spank me for this because it's an outlier? Come on, man. Come on, man. Hey, you know something? At least you didn't make the other noise. Anyway.
Hi, Papi.
Oh, man. Yeah, to hear us are in the same room. what was I going to ask you? Oh, did those two audio files come through as audio files, or were they not the right format? Remember when I sent those to you?
They should work. Just have to keep your mug up on screen.
My mug? Yeah. I actually extracted these files from these audios from others. Anyway, okay. But we have a lot of things to get into. We can go to video 7 first. Even though there's much to get into, I do want to address something that came up today in it was a live from Studio 6B, which I believe is still on right now. But there was a question that was asked, and I heard this question asked earlier in the day from someone else and some other discussions about this, which has a lot to do, I believe, with where we're at today. And we need to have answers. We need to have answers about some certain things. By the way, Carolyn Leavitt was gave her first press conference. She's the youngest press secretary in the history of the United States. She gave her first one today, did very well. It's amazing because now many of the so-called alternative media, replacing the mainstream media, the legacy media now is able to apply for, receive perhaps a media pass, which is something we are not interested in doing. We're not interested in doing that. I talked to some people that the resources it would take is beyond our budget, okay, because we would have to have a full-time person there, okay. So that's added salary, added workers' comp, added this, added that, and it would just be cost prohibitive.
You can just move to DC.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to move to the East End of DC and or West End. I'm not sure. And hang out there. Yeah, right.
You'd end up getting kicked out anyways.
I'm telling you, they would kick me out. But I've been kicked out of much finer places in my life than that.
He threw a TV.
You know, DC, you weren't impressed, were you, Eric the Tech, when you went?
I mean, hate it.
The people especially. Oh my goodness.
I hate it there.
The layout, yeah. But what do you hate most about it? What do you dislike most about
everything?
Everything. It's got a vibe to it too, doesn't it? It's got a
sinister
vibe. Yeah, it does. All right. Well, let's go to cut 7. And this is something that's been on my mind, and I want answers to this. And I mentioned Carolyn Leavitt. Folks, wait, before we bring that on, are you buying this drone story or explanation? Are you buying it? In the chat, let me take an unofficial poll right now. Are you buying, or are you accepting the, well, it was us and it was all cleared through the FAA and it's all cool and everything was fine. You buying it? Nope. BS. It says Sanjay Benji, right? Did I get that right? Hell no. Absolutely not. Okay. No. There's more to this. I agree. No. That's a big no. Okay. Not at all. Okay. Not for a second. No. Which story? No. Doesn't matter which story, right? No, I ain't buying anything. The drone story is the explanation. I'm not either. And I hate to say that, given... I gotta adjust this. Hang on a second here. I hate to say that, given... Eric the Tech, Jeopardy music plays. Am I screwing you up with this?
What'd you say?
All right. No, there's something not right with the drone story. I don't know what it is, except I know BS when I hear it and feel it and see it, and that's BS. Why the secretive nature of this, I don't know. I feel better. This is going to sound weird. I feel better getting lied to by Donald Trump or Carolyn Leavitt than I do from the lesbianic press secretary as well as the potato head in the White House. And I say that only because... there's malice and then there's a level of protection. I don't want to get lied to by anyone, but if there has to be a lie, because everyone lies. I'm telling you right now, everyone lies. And if you're in government, that's just a triple given. You're lying and you can't believe what you say. I don't care. Republican, Democrat, left, right. It doesn't matter. You lie. But there's something more to this drone stuff. Because even if you are brain dead, why would you allow that to fester in the American public psyche? I'm just asking. All right. Let's go to cut 7 in the show notes. And again, folks, go to hagmapi.com, click on the headline, and there, once you open that up, All of the links will be right there. And Eric Tech, remind me after the show. I got to tell you, you got to make contact with someone. I should have told you this before the show, but tomorrow someone needs your assistance. So I offered your assistance. All right.
Joy.
If you can hear the stuff going through my ears right now, off air. Yeah. Okay. Here's cut 7. This is from live from Studio 6B tonight on Real America's Voice. Who in the hell is running the government? Who is running the government for 4 years? And if you think about that, the obvious answer, of course, is Obama, right? You would think Obama being in the background, given everything he said and the extension of his policies as verification. But no, there's something more to this. There's something more to who is running the government. And I believe this. I thought this was a rather interesting answer here. Again, this show is not exactly a solid news show. I'm talking about live from Studio 6B. It's a hybrid kind of show. So read or listen through it. And I think you'll know what I mean. Go ahead and hit cut 7.
Another question we really need to have an answer to is who the hell was running the government for the last 4 years?
Yeah.
That's really who was it? Who was really responsible for all of the destruction of the country for the last 4 years? Because they shouldn't be able to just now slither off into the darkness just because it's over now.
Yeah.
So who exactly was it? That's what we really should find out, because obviously we know who it wasn't. So let's find out who it was.
Could it be the gentleman who claims to be dating one Jennifer Aniston now?
Oh, don't ruin my whole visual of Jennifer Aniston.
Could it be?
He's dating her. Ruin. I think it was a committee of people. I believe there was a group of people that made every decision and just put stuff in front of Joe and said, okay, this is what we're doing.
Right.
I don't think it was one person, even, you know, the Obama thing, which I've felt for a long time. But I really think it was a group of people that were making all these decisions while Joe just, you know, sat there and signed away.
Yeah, it was probably Obama with his group of people, like the Susan Rices of the world.
Exactly.
You know, that were all peppered throughout the administration anyway.
Exactly.
So they were just directing, hey, this is what Obama wants us to do. You do this, you do this. Let's get this in front of the old man and have him sign it.
The fact that he didn't remember executive orders that he had signed.
Right.
You know, in that meeting with Johnson that came out. I mean, that's just... And you look at how sharp this guy is, Trump. You look at how sharp he is. He knows everything. Everything. And Biden can't even remember what he signed. I mean, it's just the difference is like out of a Hollywood movie. Yeah.
So, okay. And if you think about this, I'm gravitating more toward, and I've always classified Obama as kind of like the middleman, right? The most immediate handler, the message deliverer, this is what we're going to do, kind of running the ground game at the White House. But the interesting terminology there, a committee of people, I believe on the day-to-day operations, you're looking at staffers, pretty much all staff. And
Michael and I.
And, of course, Michael. Thanks for putting that in there. That's right. Which as well. And think about this. You might not think that this is relevant or related, but think about this. The timing of this reported marital issue with Obama. Does this, folks, and again, I'm looking at the chat too, because we're having kind of a conversation here in a sense. Is the timing related to Obama not having any say now on the world stage in terms of running the White House? I'm just curious of what your thoughts. Say that again.
Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
Man, you got okay. You got a lot of new ones, and those aren't mine either. Mine just drone.
Hello, everybody.
Come on, man.
Come on, people.
So, okay. So I'm getting some pretty interesting responses in the chat. No, he was too good, obvious to begin with. That's from Myra Rain. Interesting. Laugh out loud, Eric. Okay, yeah. You got lots of love there, Eric. I'm telling you. Rehoboth Farm. Thank you. That's right. Obama and Jennifer Aniston are both involved with Diddy's crew. If you go back as well, there is some overlap with Epstein, early Epstein, not later Epstein, with Obama. And then I think someone might have knocked him and said, hey, straighten up here. You can't be doing this. And there was some whitewashing of records. And this is especially when Epstein was dealing with his Florida situation. And Aniston, of course, being in Hollywood, yes, absolutely. But I think there is this issue with who is running things and them not splitting earlier. If in fact they are going to split, I'm just saying. All right, I'm just saying. Big Mike Taylor is dead. That's right. The chef. Oh, wait a minute. The chef. Do you mean the chef? All right. So there's that. I just wanted to bring that out. So who was running the government? That was a question I had, and we have to really root this out, and we have to identify this. President Trump, by the way, has been on a tear pretty much since he stepped into office, and I love this. And, you know, one of the other things, too, and I got a lot of things to get into very deeply. But one of the things that was bothering me, you know, when President Trump said, you know, turn, essentially, there's a spigot. You folks remember that? There's a spigot in California you can turn on and get the water down to Southern California. And people are saying, well, you crazy that, you know, you're looking for a faucet up there, and they're laughing at him and poking fun at him. So I did some research on this. Yeah, I'm sure you folks, listeners and viewers, probably knew this more before I did. Did you know there is one? not a faucet, but kind of sort of a valve up there. Did you know that? Hmm. Check this out. President Trump is right. There is a giant spigot that can send more water to Southern California. Now, this is not the be-all, end-all of things, but this is something that President Trump in his first term addressed. Biden, of course, reversed everything. Newsom fought back against it after he came into office, which was, what, in 22 as governor. I could be wrong on that. And then now he's saying, wait a second, turn this valve or turn this water, this station back on. Well, watch cut number one. I think this is pretty interesting. This is what I found.
So you know how all the journalists and the Democrats when President Trump has been talking about the water situation here in California, and he talks about a giant spigot that you can turn to send more water from the north to the south, and they say, what's he talking about? He doesn't understand. There's no giant spigot. Well, there is actually, and I'm standing right in front of it. There it is, over my shoulder. It's called the C.W. Bill Jones Pumping Station, federally owned. Let's give it a simpler name. That is the Trump Pump. And when he was president the first time around, President Trump ordered more water to be pumped from this pumping station, which has six giant pumps that lift up water from the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta and sends it south in the Delta-Mendota Canal. And President Trump ordered more water to be pumped here and sent south. So just up that road where I was at the Trump pump, you come to this. It's the entrance to the Harvey O. Banks Delta Pumping Plant, which is part of the state water project. You could think of this as Gavin's pump. This sends water into the California Aqueduct, which is the state-owned part of the system. And guess what happened the last time when President Trump said more water should be sent in the federal system? California said less water should be sent into the California Aqueduct through these pumps here. They retaliated by restricting the amount of water. Unbelievable. Why do they do that? Exactly.
exactly as President Trump's been saying, to protect fish. Let's hope this time they have more common sense. And when President Trump orders more water to be sent through the federal Delta Mendota Canal, the jokers in charge of California don't send less water through the Gavin pump here at the Banks pumping station.
So you know how all...
So... Did you folks know that? I did not. I didn't know that. I didn't quite. I knew that there was a
Trump pump.
Well, I didn't know there was a Trump pump. I mean, the nickname. Well, he called it. Steve Hilton called it a Trump pump. But I didn't know that. And I did not know there was a second pump as well for that was owned by the state. One is federally, supposedly federally controlled, and the other state controlled. So, but think about Newsom, and I've got some information on Newsom as well. It's incredible. If I can get to it, it's a background on Newsom. It's really crazy. Also, folks, it's no secret. I mean, we investigated and continue to investigate the Butler assassination attempt, right? And I'm going to say this. The more that we look into this, the worse it gets. Now, we have some additional assets at our disposal, considering who's in charge. These people behind this assassination are not done. And I promise you this, I'm going to dedicate an entire program to this assassination attempt. And to the extent possible, give you the names and even be precise in some of the locations, because we did the same thing that the Heritage Foundation did, and that was isolate the IP devices at the residence elsewhere. Eric the Tech was heavily involved in all of this as well. He's a very, very quiet but deadly individual, Eric the Tech. Very efficient, very effective.
Wilson. From Home Improvement.
Oh, from Home Improvement. that first came to my mind, but I didn't think that you would remember that series, but okay. Yes. And picture him looking over a fence like that, or having, you know, only the top part of his head. I make light of this because it's a very, very dangerous situation in my view. It's dangerous to the President of the United States. It's dangerous to his family. And it's dangerous to people in the White House on his staff. This attempt I have no doubt in my mind. I was trying to get my thoughts together there.
You just pulled a Mitch McConnell.
Glitch Mitch, right? No, I really want to be careful with what I say, because I don't want to make things sound more important than they are, or I don't want to make things sound... I just want to be very accurate with what I'm saying. There is a network of people out there behind the visible people that you see. Let me let video two or cut two, Matt Taibbi, Tucker Carlson, their conversation. It's a short conversation. It's only part of the interview. Let me let them at least introduce this while I gather my thoughts, because again, I don't want to overstate anything, and I certainly don't want to understate anything. I don't want to misrepresent anything, because Eric the Tech, would you call it confusing in a sense? I mean, how would you best describe that situation? Complex,
multifaceted.
Thank you. Multifaceted.
A cluster.
Yeah. A cluster, you know what? You would think when you've got multiple agencies involved that you could hide, that you could not hide things. That's what I thought. For example, when you've got seven jurisdictions represented in one area of that size, that you can't possibly fool seven jurisdictions. Well, they really didn't have to be frank. They just had to do a few things to cause what appear to be failures. But these were deliberate failures. Who's got the ability to do that? It would be at the federal level. It would be at not just the federal level, but also the guns for hire. And I don't mean guns for hire. I'm talking about the hired people. There were some of them. I can guarantee you there's a few watching the program right now, just wondering what we know. Here's cut to Matt Taibbi, Tucker Carlson. They suggest deep state involvement in the assassination attempts, plural, of Trump. Now, I will say this. We've only touched on Florida. I mean, touched on it just from a database perspective and the background of Ruth, as opposed to the mechanics, just the background, just the data. That's all we've done with Florida. Our interest is up here in Western Pennsylvania. But here's cut two.
Then there's the whole question of the investigation of the Trump assassination incidents. We heard nothing about that. It was the most extraordinary news story that I've ever, apart from the disappearing president and the mysterious COVID. Nomination and COVID, presidential candidate and ex-president gets shot and the story's dead within like 48 hours. And all you read in the news from the FBI, there are these comments saying that they don't have any motive evidence. We've done 100 interviews, but we don't know anything about why this happened or, what was going on there. Do you believe that? I have a very hard time believing that there's nothing interesting.
Well, he was kind of your classic 20-year-old American kid with no social media presence whatsoever, ever.
Right, exactly.
And it is a very typical American story where one day you just wake up and decide to die assassinating a presidential candidate for no reason.
Right. It's like who has like your first joint. Yeah.
Your first joint. Yeah.
And then the second one, I mean, the Ryan Routh thing, that's not weird at all. Like, I just flew into Florida last night. I don't think I could have gotten my hands on, a Chinese made SKS semi-automatic rifle without help. I mean, I don't know. That's being a little conspiratorial, but look, there were a lot of.
He met with the members of Congress. He was lived in Ukraine. What? And we know that our intel agencies working through the Ukrainian intel agencies have murdered all these people and tried to murder all these people, including some I know personally. And so that's just a fact. And he was there with them, but this had nothing to do. And by the way, are those the only two attempts on Donald Trump's life, do you think, during this campaign season? I don't think so.
So why don't we know
more about that?
I don't know why we don't know more about that.
Yeah, right. So, and I've talked to the Trump people and Trump himself, and I'm being sincere. I really don't have a sense of what they think of all of that. I know that in public they haven't been anxious to talk about it at all.
So I've talked to some of them, and I've heard a lot of anger about this. And I think this is the impetus for these investigations. I think probably the second attempt was the last straw for some of the people on his staff, and you know, it's part of the reason why I think they're going to be very public about this.
It can't come too soon, I really think. And I will say, you know, whatever people watching think of Trump, I know for a dead certain fact that a lot of the people who work for him really like him personally. So I think they are mad about it.
They're very mad about it.
So what he said there in terms of the difference between the first and second attempt being like the straw that broke the camel's back. Okay, that is somewhat true. By the way, I didn't glitch. I really didn't glitch. I was really or freeze. I was trying to make sure I didn't say anything irresponsible or say anything out of school. But the first attempt was complex, and as Eric the Tech said, multifaceted. It had a great deal of planning to it, with the exception of the location. Crooks was not the only, in quotation, in air quotes, patsy. Think about this, okay? Now I'm giving you new information. Butler was not the only scene that was selected or area of potential action. Much like Kennedy, Dallas wasn't the only place. It was Chicago. It was Florida. The same with Butler. Crooks was not the only patsy. And I say patsy because he was not the only one there. The people behind him, they still exist in the network. Again, I'm just trying to be very careful with what I'm saying. They're not going to stop until they are stopped. They're domestic in origin, meaning they're American. At least with Butler. They may have outside interests, but the people I'm talking about are from the U.S. And you may ask, why put such a rube or whatever the term would be, numbskull on the roof in Butler? Because he really fit being the perfect patsy. And I know somebody had said something about a yearbook in the chat. Previously, we showed pictures of a yearbook that was in the Bethel Park Library. And when our investigators looked at the yearbook, it was after the BBC was there. And the picture of Thomas Matthew Crooks was cut out along with a second picture. It was cut out of the yearbook using scissors or something as opposed to a razor blade scissors. You may think, well, that makes no sense. I mean, there's thousands of yearbooks out there probably. Just saying. Just answering the question. This is what we found. The BBC was able to see the picture. How it played out was, and I'm using these days as an example. On Monday, the BBC, well, actually, this is true. On the following Monday, the BBC went to the library, got the yearbook, looked at the photograph, handed the yearbook back to the library attendant. It was in fine order. The page was not cut. A couple of days later, that same yearbook, when our investigative team looked at it, the picture was cut out along with a second picture. Just saying. We had and have people on the ground in Western Pennsylvania, throughout Western Pennsylvania, in Butler, in Bethel Park, and areas around there. We've been kicked out of Bethel Park. We've been kicked out of Butler County. At least I have asked not to return. I think Eric the Tech is the only one that's allowed to go in there because he's Wilson. with the fence. But there needs to be answers. And here's why I mentioned this and why this has been heavy on my heart. President Trump is changing the way things are operating in the U.S. He's costing a lot of people a lot of money. The NGOs, he's costing the NGOs a lot of money. He's costing the forever state people a lot of money. And when that happens, I'm telling you right now, people get angry. Money is a driver of a lot of things. And I'm just saying right now, you don't really have to be ideologically faceted or anti Donald Trump in terms of his ideology. All you need is for your money flow to get cut off or threatened to be cut off, and that's sufficient for stuff like this to happen, or even power threatened. And in this case, it's both. All right. Again, please forgive me for being halting in my speech and seemingly glitchy. I'm not. I just want to be very, very accurate in my statements because these people are still out there. Speaking of people who want to get Donald Trump, Letitia James never, ever stops. I don't know how many people saw this. This is important, too, because this is, in my view, this is the exact same template, exact same procedure that people are using against President Trump. Letitia James, in this case, I think she's rogue, as opposed to a Jack Smith who's got some juice behind him. As when I say juice, I'm talking about power people behind him. I think Tish James is just rogue. I think she's absolutely gonzo. But she's going after President Trump. She's suing him over the federal aid freeze. If you understand the federal aid freeze, it's important, I think, that people who are not cooperating, or not people, but people representing counties, cities, states, and whatever, not cooperating with the agenda of President Trump are in the crosshairs. And if, for example, as an example, if you are uncooperative with the ICE and the move to take people out, the illegals out of your city or county or state, you're going to have to pay some consequences or face some consequences. This is that. And this is Letitia James coming back at President Trump. And again, I use this as an example because we're going to see more and more and more and more of this. It's not a complaint. It's an observation. And this can gum up the works if enough people do it. For example, the judge that just ruled against Judge Lauren Alakin, who made a ruling today about the President Trump's, okay, we're going to freeze the money, okay, going to different states, organizations, and different places until we figure out what it's being used for. Well, Judge Lauren Alakin ruled against him, put a TRO on his efforts, temporary restraining order. So you have to look at who this Alakin is. And what made her do this? Well, she worked in the Solicitor General's office under Kagan, you know, the Supreme Court justice. She also worked at another law firm. And then, at the law firm of at a specific law firm that used to employ Mayorkas. And used to employ Ron Klain and Tom Donilon. Tom Donilon is the mouthpiece for really the intelligence community and the deep state. And of course, you know, Alejandro Mayorkas, who that is. Donilon, I should add, has a whole list of really swamp credentials. Well, they all do, basically. But Donilon was, among other things, Obama's NSA, and currently was involved in Obama's NSA, and currently runs BlackRock's think tank. It runs in the family because Donilon's wife and his brother are longtime Biden aides. So this is what we see in the deep state part of things. Now, again, James is more of a rogue aspect, but again, the template is the same. Go ahead and run cut three. This is Letitia James suing President Trump over the federal aid freeze, 57 seconds long, and then we'll move on.
Not only does this administration's new policy put people at risk, but it is plainly unconstitutional. The president does not get to decide which laws to enforce and for whom. When Congress dedicates funding for a program, the president cannot pull that funding on a whim. Later today, I am leading and joining with my colleagues, my fellow Democratic attorney generals, in suing this administration to stop this illegal freeze of essential funds for our state. We will not stand for any illegal policy that puts essential services for millions of Americans at risk. And we work tirelessly overnight to ensure that that does not happen. Our lawsuit will seek an order, a court order, to immediately stop the enforcement of the OMB policy and to preserve essential funding for Americans.
Right.
Nice green screen.
Did you notice that? I mean, that was obvious, wasn't it? The green screen? Okay. Thank you. I thought maybe I was just having a... I thought my eyes were going bad. All right. A couple of things with respect to... I'm not going to... I don't want to get into, like, the... there was a scare at the Capitol, of course, with a guy that attempted to go in, and he had a couple of Molotov cocktails, a knife and such, turned himself in, ultimately. To me, that's just kind of distraction. There are people out there that want to kill President Trump, kill, in this case, Pete Hegseth, the gentleman that was being sworn in today, and I think also bombed the Heritage Foundation. It was another conservative think tank. But anyway, that to me is a distraction. Let's keep to the things like the border, keep to the corruption that needs to be exposed. These two issues, I think, are key today. The border and the corruption. Grant Stitchfield is just a tremendous guy. I believe he's got a great show on Real America's Voice, and he has some of the greatest people in the field working at the border. Out of all of the clips that I watched today, and I mean, I must have watched maybe 25, 30 clips of people at the border. This to me was one of the most important and one of the most telling clips of events taking place at the border. And this was on this evening's Grant Central show. This is about 6 minutes long, but folks, pay attention to this, please. Watch, well, listen to the questions, listen to the answers, and watch the background, watch the actions of the Border Patrol, and whatever the camera catches as well. This is extremely important. This is the difference between 4 years of Mayorkas and Biden and whoever was behind him, including and especially Obama, versus the way a country should operate. This is perhaps one of the best, in my view, video clips of the border, the way it exists today, and what is happening down there today. Don't forget, yesterday there was a firefight. I mean, there was back and forth shooting. If you didn't catch yesterday's show, please do. That was a pretty good show. There's more to come. And it's going to be much more deadly, much worse. But watch this. This is cut A from video number 4. And again, it's about 6 minutes long, but every minute is important, I believe. This is reporting from the border in the field. Current as of today. And look at the difference. Notice the difference between today and a year ago, or last week even. Incredible. Here it is.
Because I want to keep everybody safe. I want to go right out to Anthony Aguero, who is down on the border right now, who's telling me he's getting rocks thrown at him as we speak. And Anthony, I would say welcome to the program, but I want you to stay safe there. If you have to go, you please do so. Tell me what's happening right now and where are you?
Currently, I'm out here in the El Paso sector, Grant. Border Patrol agents, the dynamics, and the energy is just, it's day and night, the difference. Border Patrol agents are now using their aerial detection. They are using drones, and they are now using blimps in the sky to be overlooking all of this immediate sector. Before, as you just went live, I posted a video as well. They have now taken...
Eric, pause that for a second with that on the screen. So here's what I want to know. When I saw this, my first thought was, did Mayorkas' grandkids, they have like a birthday party, and was this used for the birthday party for the kids as opposed to the border? I'm just, where was this for 4+ years? And for the radio listeners, it's a picture of a blimp, basically. But seriously, where was this for the last 4 years? Where were the other aerial assets for the last 4 years? Go ahead and continue that.
This mountaintop right behind me, it's a huge, huge significance because the morale has completely turned around. They are taking back their work environment. They are now pushing back against these individuals, and they are actually patrolling and repelling these criminal invaders still trying to break into our country, sir. El Paso, the city, the El Paso County has begun the infrastructure and some of the work to begin some of the wall that is going to be coming in, sir.
All right, real quickly, who do you think was throwing rocks at you just moments before you came on air?
It is the cartel members, the scouts that are up here right behind us. There is no wall in this area. And right where I'm standing, it is known for agents as the Sunland Park Bowl. East of me into the El Paso, currently we're in Sunland Park, New Mexico. About a mile east from us right here is the structure that Steve Bannon helped put up, the We Build a Wall structure. Infrastructure is being laid out. And very, very soon, we will see both walls from Sunland Park, New Mexico, connect to the wall that is currently standing on the American Eagle Brick Company, sir.
Let's do this one by one. You mentioned the wall. Let's play a clip of you narrating what you're seeing there. If we could roll that, I believe that's cut 7.
This area is where the wall deliberately ends, and this is the busiest corridor right now here for this sector. This is the area where the cartel is taking full advantage that there is no wall completed. The We Build a Wall structure is about a mile on the other side of this. If y'all remember, that is the project that Steve Bannon...
Okay, so you're in the same spot there, so we can cut that because you just told us that live. Let me play the next clip for you. This is Border Patrol, I guess, chasing down some cartel members. Let's roll that one, guys.
There's more illegal aliens right behind the little hill, right in behind that obelisk right there. There's a bunch of illegal aliens trying to run across, and then you got this guy up here who is a spotter. Overlooking the whole deal. More agents are coming through, baby. He's going up there.
I just want you guys to check out the prompt response of all of the Border Patrol agents now seeing those criminals up there. They're all going. They're all going. Hell.
Anthony, Was that the scene before President Trump ever has taken over? Have you seen that kind of response?
No, sir. As a matter of fact, Border Patrol agents would not dare even operate in that area. That area was in full control by the cartel and the criminal organization elements as far as them carrying weapons even into U.S. territory. That is the area where the cartel has given their peons the green light to fire upon Border Patrol agents. However, the scene out here today, it is very well controlled. Agents are keeping an eye on one another. Some agents are now riding in pairs, something that we have not seen before. And agents are being warned to please carry their long weapons anywhere that they're out here walking around, sir.
All right. While you're out there, Anthony, are there agents out there near you now? Are you wearing a ballistic vest? Are you, if they will shoot at Border Patrol agents, I would assume they'd shoot at a Real America's Voice correspondent.
Yes, sir. We are staying safe. This is an area where we cannot be once the sun goes down. Border Patrol agents have already warned me since earlier this week. But Border Patrol agents continue to advance, and it is refreshing, Grant. It is very refreshing for these guys to actually be out here doing their job in a good mood, and they're hungry, they're ready, and they're just marching on out, and they are not allowing anything or anyone to stop them. They are on a full-out mission, and America is making a comeback, and America's borders are finally standing strong again, sir.
All right, Anthony, I want to thank you for the reporting that you're doing, bringing it to all of us here. And I would like you to do me a favor. From all of Stinchfield's Army that's watching this program, I want you, as soon as you get off here, I want you to go over to that Border Patrol, any of the cruisers you see, you give them a thumbs up, and you literally tell them that Stinchfield's Army, Real America's Voice.
And you can watch the entire clip, folks, at HagmanPI.com. But when you look at that, and this is really the final thing I'm going to say on the border, when you look at this, you can tell the difference between the actions of the Border Patrol today versus a month ago, a week ago, either, you know, 2 weeks ago. They've gone from babysitting and pushing papers now to bringing out the aerial assets, including, thank you, airship, the blimp, whatever, along with the drones, along with the FLIR, F-L-I-R, drones with FLIR capabilities as well. They also have ground level infrared capabilities. All of this was not being used. In fact, none of the Border Patrol agents were even in those areas that you saw right there for the last 4 years. So they could have brought anything over into the U.S., and I'm sure have. So, but the other part of this is if you, and again, maybe this is just me, but looking at this from what little experience I have with not military, but I'll say paramilitary kind of things. If you look at the cartels are scared. I believe that they are fearful because there is a lot of money at stake. And even more than the cartels, the people on this side of the border, the people at the state and even some of the county levels, for example, Maricopa County, are afraid because they are going to be losing, well, not just losing money, of course they will, but also of being exposed for working with the cartels. I'm telling you right now that this is a huge thing that I believe we're going to see more of this. We're going to see more, specifically, we are going to see more engagement between the U.S. and the cartels. We are going to see more people coming forward, either by necessity or because, hey, they don't want to go to jail, and expose some of the people involved on our side working with the cartels. And the big part of this, my question is if the Biden family, when you look at the laundry list of countries the Biden family made money from, what's to say that the Biden family weren't in some way, shape, or form making money off the cartels, maybe through some of these Catholic charity organizations or these various organizations working with these so-called migrants. But they're not, they're invaders. But perhaps could this be? And on the same show on with Grant Stinchfield, Seamus Bruner appeared and was talking about this very issue, not about the cartels and working with the cartels, but about the Biden family corruption. And Seamus Bruner has written some just fantastic books, including Compromised. It's one of the best books on the planet, I believe, about the Biden family corruption and about corruption in general, going back to Hillary Clinton and Uranium One. But when Seamus Bruner was on with Grant, he said some things that just perked my ears up. And this, again, is about a five-minute clip. But again, it's important because Seamus Bruner addresses the Biden pardons on there was a audit done about the news. How much time did the news spend on President Trump's pardon of the J6 pardons, as opposed to the Biden family pardons? 26 minutes on average to 3 minutes. So 26 minutes talking about the pardons of the J6ers to 3 minutes of the Biden pardons. That's what you get from CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS. But watch this, Seamus Bruner, fabulous. This is a keeper. In fact, only for this, especially for this, go to HagmanPI.com and make sure to download this link or bookmark it or whatever you want to do. But grab this, because this, to me, speaks volumes. And Seamus Bruner, by the way, is brilliant. He's a brilliant investigator. But here is Cut B from Video 4. Here it is.
I want you to take a look at this graphic. This is the Biden family portrait, really. It is the Biden family pardons. Hunter, James, his wife, Sarah, his sister, Valerie, and her husband, John Owens, and his brother, Francis, all pardoned by Joe Biden. Why? Well, one thing we do know about those six people, they are all connected to that slew of limited liability corporations, LLCs, that Joe Biden and Hunter Biden had created. There's literally, I don't know, dozens of them. Does it have something to do with that? What else could be behind it? Well, our friends over at the Government Accountability Institute raised some questions about this. Peter Schweitzer was the first to do it. Seamus Bruner is with the Government Accountability Institute. We thought we'd bring him in to talk about it all. Seamus, welcome back.
Grant, it's great to be with you. These pardons were the single most corrupt acts of any president in history. We are confident that we can say that. We looked through every possible corrupt act. We know everything there is to know about the Clintons, and those would probably be close runners up. But Joe Biden pardoning his entire family member, all of his family members who were involved, specifically involved, like you said, with the LLCs that were the entities where all the corrupt cash, the tens of millions of dollars from Ukraine, Russia, China, that is the most corrupt thing a president's ever done, because he wasn't just pardoning his family members. He was pardoning himself by making it so that these family members can't be investigated. There's really no way to go after Joe, because these were the individuals collecting the money. And so we follow the money. When you pardon the people collecting the money, the case falls apart.
Mm-hmm. So I want to make it clear. Corrupt and illegal don't always have to mean the same thing, because Joe Biden legally was allowed to pardon anybody he wants, at least in my opinion. I don't know if that's your opinion or not. Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know the Clintons really tested the limits with the pardon gate. I mean, this was back in the 90s, but Bill Clinton pardoned a number of individuals who were paying his brother-in-law, Hugh, and both Hugh and Tony Rodham, and also his own brother, Roger Clinton, got a pardon. But they were selling the pardons way back then in the 90s. I mean, there were so many instances, terrible people. This made it all the way up through Congress. It was investigated, and ultimately the results are is that the pardon power of the president is absolute. So, yes, Joe Biden is allowed to pardon whoever he wants for any reason, and it cannot be questioned, which is what makes it so corrupt, because, you know, by pardoning his family members, these are the thing we've not seen before, by the way, Grant, is this blanket immunity with no specific crimes attached. I mean, usually the pardoning, someone has been convicted of a crime. These people have not been charged with crimes. So that's significant.
Your boss, Peter Schweizer, who you worked so closely with, I don't think there's two other guys in the nation who know as much about the Biden crime family as you two guys do. He raised the issue that why did it go through 2024? And was there some kind of a deal struck for Joe Biden to step down? And could they flow money for him to step down through some of these LLCs? To quote Peter Schweizer, I don't have evidence of that, but it could be a possibility, basically. Would you agree with your boss on that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with him. I mean, we have reason to believe, we don't have the evidence yet, but we have reason to believe that when Joe Biden stepped down, that is, by the way, a very valuable thing. Back in July, when, you know, he had the disastrous debate performance, and everyone from Pelosi to George Clooney, Obama wanted Joe out of the race. They actually thought Kamala had a shot. In hindsight, we know that's ludicrous. But having Joe step aside, he has an enormous amount of leverage as the president. He never had to step aside. He didn't have to step aside. But when they were all saying that there's enormous amounts of money at stake here, that presents an opportunity. And what we know about the Biden family is whenever there's an opportunity to cash in, they take it. And so there's a number of ways, these LLCs that you mentioned, Hunter Biden's art dealings that were subject to. And this is why the pardon would extend through December, because, you know, when he signs these pardons, ostensibly the family members haven't committed any crimes in the last several months. Well, why would he have it extend through December? And so there must have been all kinds of dealings going on, backroom dealings going on towards the end of Joe Biden's tenure as he's a lame duck. I mean, this is his last shot. This is his last time to make a deal, time to get any money before he just gets rolled off to pasture.
Okay, now what I'm hearing, and I hope people really took that in what Seamus Brunner was talking about. The pardons, historically the pardons are on, they go unchallenged, because ultimately, as the chief magistrate of the United States, the president has the final say. What I have been hearing, okay, through different people, is that the pardons will be challenged in some way or form. They're going to be challenged, and it's going to have to do with a couple of different issues. The verbiage of the actual pardons, specifically with respect to the lack of a charge, and the breadth of the pardon, meaning the time frame, which is just it's unheard of, as well as the mental state of Joseph Robinette Biden. Okay, so there's a couple of avenues. While many believe that Biden insulated himself from investigation into taking money, taking bribes, that might not be the case, which is why this week is so important with the nominations. And about the nominations this week, heading up all of the, when you look at the nominations this week that are going before the Senate, RFK, Kash Patel, specifically those two are really hot button, nominations. Kash Patel for the head of the FBI. The last person they want in the FBI is Kash Patel, because he will and can, he can and will expose the corruption and then do something about it. His book, Government Gangsters, is a really important read. For the readers out there, folks, I would urge you to get Government Gangsters. And it's probably not, the entirety may not be everything. I mean, may not, you might know all of it, but it's all in one place. It's really an important resource, I think. And RFK Jr., he poses the greatest risk to the money interests in Congress. Now, his wife came out, or I'm sorry, his running mate, presidential running mate, came out and said that she will put up, I believe it was the running mate, correct me, it could be his wife, I'm not sure which, but it really doesn't matter, but she would put up money to primary anyone who voted against the nomination of RFK Jr. And don't forget, the role of the Senate in these nominations is advice and consent, plain and simple. It's not necessarily, it was never intended to be a backstop or a block or a speed bump in the road to the nomination. It was never intended for that. It was to make sure that the best possible candidate got in. Remember, during Obama's first term, he had no trouble whatsoever with any of his nominees. All right. It was only when President Trump came into play. So that's important for, I think, for people to understand. But with respect to the pardons, please don't let that fall off your radar. That's very important. Another thing that I want to get into, and by the way, we missed up there a break. This is a Hagmann Report on Tuesday, January 28th, 2025. Tomorrow, J.J. Carroll, who is a retired deputy patrol agent in charge for the Customs and Border Patrol, will be with me. And he's the author of Invaded, The Intentional Destruction of America. And I spoke with him today, and I'm going to tell you right now, folks, he is going to just knock your socks off with the information that he has, the current information about the border, and even more importantly, about how the border was handled from Mayorkas down, the entire border situation, and give you the big picture as to why he believes that was done the way it was done. So it's going to be a very important program tomorrow. So tell your friends and family about it. And thank you so much for tuning into that. Another thing, too, that I noticed with Davos is now kind of going out of the media, even non-mainstream media. People are not talking about Davos. But one thing that, and I'm not sure many people caught this about Davos, President Trump did and mentioned this. Rebecca Walser, an expert in banking, caught this and spoke about this. I've got actually two specific clips regarding this. They are so important because they can affect you. And they have affected us as conservatives, pro make America great again, ideological, Americans ideologically for America. When you have a bank, for example, say you cannot have an account here, it's obviously worse than GoDaddy telling us we could not have our website on their platform. It's worse than YouTube saying you can't have a show on YouTube. Because with the banks should not even be remotely political. But they are. And you may think that things are going to be or have calmed down with President Trump in office. The push toward censorship and banning, depersoning conservatives continues, and it's ratcheting up. President Trump spoke about it at Davos, and Rebecca Walser also did as well. The first clip is embedded in the second clip, but I thought it important enough to isolate this. Folks, pay attention to this, because this could impact you. If you are banking at Bank of America, for example, as one example, this could happen to you. And if it does, I mean, it's not just, you know how inconvenient it is you know, every time you get the debit cards and you get a new debit card, you've got to go out and manually fix. If you have any automatic deductions, you've got to put your new debit card number in. You think that's inconvenient? This is much worse. So this is cut five. This is 57 seconds of the larger cut, but I want to isolate this and show you. This is cut five on the show notes. JP Morgan debanking conservatives. Cut five.
On JP Morgan, they in 2024, they dropped a policy that was a requirement that merchants that process through their WePay electronic payment processing system not accept payments from persons that face allegations of racism or sexual harassment. So you can see where this goes very quickly in a free society. And you have the UK going through this right now. Hey, you said something on social media that I found, hurtful, that hurt my feelings. I'm going to report you. And then these kinds of things lead you to being debanked, decriminalized. And it's all about opinion. And it is absolutely about the conservative opinion and going after the conservatives so that they feel like they can't speak up, that they don't have the ability to get their message out because they could possibly lose their bank.
I think she meant decommercialized or something to that effect, but you get the idea. Okay, that was just about the banks and specifically JP Morgan. This next clip is the longer clip of hers. It goes into more detail, and I specifically pulled this out because I think it's important to get the entire context, because there's more to it than just the banking. It impacts all of our way of lives, and it could impact you and me. It has with us. And Eric the Tech, if I can ask you this, didn't we have to switch because we were under threat? Our payment processing facility, the Hagman store, did we not have to change to a patriotic platform as opposed to the one we had because of that?
Yes.
Okay.
We use both.
Okay. We use both. Okay. And that's for your convenience as opposed to our convenience. It's more inconvenient for us to use two. That way you didn't have to change credit cards and all that stuff, or change, re-input your information into the new one. That's all we're saying. But here's cut six. Wow. Here's cut six of the same subject. This is, again, I believe this is how I did this. Well, let's find out together. Here's cut six.
President Trump's Davos speech made it very clear to the World Economic Forum the United States is done with all the woke nonsense, the global elite, and allowing America to be screwed over.
That's right. With just 1 week in office, Trump has made it clear that he is enacting his America First agenda. And for more on this, let's welcome in tax attorney, wealth strategist, and certified financial planner Rebecca Walzer. Rebecca, thank you so much for being on Special Report today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So first question here, what is going on in the minds of these elites from the World Economic Forum?
Well, the first thing they want to do is deny that it actually happened. I think I don't want to make disparagements on corporations here in America, but I would say that Bank of America, I think, has the most instances of debanking people for what they say is non-political reasons. They'll say it's just suspicious activity. Reports are they're complying with Treasury and FBI requests. There is, unfortunately, since the Patriot Act, something called an NSL, a national security letter, that can basically go directly to the bank and request all of your bank transactions without the bank being allowed to even inform you that that is happening. So we have a lot of invasions into our privacy that should be protected by under the Fourth Amendment. Of course, you know, I am a lawyer as well, but that has been invaded unconstitutionally, especially by things like the Patriot Act. I think that was one of the worst things that we could have done for our human rights in America. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's not good for fighting crime. If you want to search everybody's everything at all times, you'll find the criminals, but you'll also expose people to a level of degradation of their privacy that they are not entitled to have as a government. But when you look at Bank of America, they have the most examples. But I want to read to you specifically, Bo, here on JP Morgan. They in 2024, they dropped a policy that was a requirement that merchants that process through their WePay electronic payment processing system not accept payments from persons that face allegations of racism or sexual harassment. So you can see where this goes very quickly in a free society. And you have the UK going through this right now. Hey, you said something on social media that I found, hurtful, that hurt my feelings. I'm going to report you. And then these kinds of things lead you to being debanked, decriminalized. And it's all about opinion. And it is absolutely about the conservative opinion and going after the conservatives so that they feel like they can't speak up, that they don't have the ability to get their message out because they could possibly lose their bank.
Wow. Well, I certainly appreciate how fired up you are about this and that you're speaking out on it. Now, President Trump, he actually jumped in on all of this criticism of Bank of America. I want to play that quickly for you and get your reaction.
And by the way, speaking of you, and you've done a fantastic job, but I hope you start opening your bank to conservatives, because many conservatives complain that the banks are not allowing them to do business within the bank. And that included a place called Bank of America. This conservative, they don't take conservative business. And I don't know if the regulators mandated that because of Biden or what, but you and Jamie and everybody, I hope you're going to open your banks to conservatives, because what you're doing is wrong.
Well, I think one thing is for sure. If President Trump is on it, you know he's going to do something about it. What do you hope to see happen?
Well, first of all, we have to get the denial to stop. I mean, even First Lady Melania was interviewed and talked about herself being debanked at the end of the Trump 1.0 administration. So Trump 2.0, I think we need to call a spade a spade. Look, this is a president that has come in with an administration that understands now how the game is played, how the political machinations actually function, and he's not running for re-election. He has nothing to prove to anyone except for the Americans that voted for him, and it is time to make this happen. The banking corporate world has got to stop denying that they have policies that they will not produce to the public, whether it be DEI or anti, manufacturing. We don't want to have anything to do with any supply chain that deals with guns or other things that they don't find that meets their agenda. And this is a problem. It can be documented. I cannot stand when they say, oh, that's just one example.
Okay, you can cut that. She makes a good point there, too, about weapons. I was talking with somebody at a retail a gun store, okay, in the area. I don't want to give out any names. I don't have that permission, but it's interesting how certain banks will require if they sell a weapon, a gun. This happens to be a store that sells other things than guns and ammunition. But if you purchase a gun, remember the story about the credit card companies and the banks would use specific codes for guns. People in chat, remember that? That is still going on with certain banks. I did not know that, but it is with ammunition. And I was also told that certain banks, now this was as of 2024, last year, certain banks were declining to do business using the credit card system for this one particular store. Okay. So here's the other issue, and she touched on this as well. Imagine not being able, and look, folks, you may not use these services, and because I don't use them, all of them, of course. So once in a while, my wife and I might use one or two, but it would not affect me. But think about your children and such. For example, you could be banned from Uber. You could be banned from Uber Eats. You can be banned from DoorDash and various other conveniences. Again, you might not use these services. It might not affect you. You might say, oh, so what? But that's a very dangerous precedent to set, very dangerous activity to engage with, in which to engage. So I'm just saying, this is still going on. President Trump addressed it at Davos, that this is not going to happen, and is implementing the changes here in the U.S. So this is a good thing. And I thought that was worthy of pointing that out. Speaking of worthy to point out, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, this is beautiful. And this is page 2 in the show notes. You can put this up next to me if you want. If not, Eric, that's fine. But Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has revoked General Mark Milley's security detail. He's revoked his security clearance, taken down all of the portraits, and he's now planning on demoting Milley. Hegseth, again, well, he ordered all of the portraits to be taken down of General Milley. This is being reported by Benny Johnson, and I think that, yeah, there it is on your screen there. And when you look at this, you can see a change in the way the Pentagon is being operated. The lethality is number one, and everything else is subservient to that already from day one. What a difference from 2017 to 2025. What a difference with respect to how things are being handled. This is a big one. And I should add this, from my understanding of the military, there's no range on demotion. He can be demoted to an E1, for example, right away. He could be given a letter of dismissal, which for someone in an officer's position is almost the equivalent of a dishonorable discharge. And that has an impact on his retirement. I'm just saying, you know, look, even without, even those people who believe military tribunals, they're on their way. No, it doesn't have to be that complex. It could be just as simple as this. And I'm just saying it's a big deal. It really is. And the other issue, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, this is page 1. Robert Kennedy, allies fear he could lose the U.S. Senate confirmation. Let me just see if I have this. No, I don't have that printed there. Okay. So this is page 1 in the show notes. This to me is something that I think if we look at this and we understand, in my view anyway, if we understand the ramifications from a Robert Kennedy from a Robert Kennedy confirmation, this people should be paying attention to this. Obviously, Kennedy was picked to run the health department. He's faced criticism over his anti-vax status, which he seemed to walk back. But in my view, he clarified this. Folks in the chat, I don't know what you think, but it seems like to me he clarified his position as opposed to walking it back. I'm not trying to convince myself or anyone else. I'm just looking at this from what I've heard in the past and current. But his allies fear that he's has not yet convinced enough senators to confirm him as Trump's top health official. And you can read the article, which will be in the show notes, but he's holding last minute meetings with Democrats and Republicans ahead of 2 days of questioning this week now, Thursday and Friday, questioning by the Senate Finance and Health Committees. Okay. He's already met more than 60 senators since his nomination. But he said the people close to him said, look, there's more anxiety now than ever before. If the vote were today, it would be iffy, according to people close to him. We really need to solidify momentum this week to overcome all of the negativity that there's been out there. And Carolyn, I don't know whether you saw this, folks. Carolyn Kennedy came out with this bizarre video and just really threw him under the bus. Of course, their cousins, Carolyn Kennedy being the daughter of JFK. But it was an incredible, Eric the Tech, I don't know if you can find it. I didn't include it in the show notes. This is posted on social media, Carolyn Kennedy. If you can find it, let me know. And I apologize for making you scramble on that. But it's, again, I think this is important to show people the level of hatred there is toward President Trump, towards his selections, towards anyone who wants to solve the problems as opposed to paint over them. This is huge. Writing in that previous report that you saw, you've got the usual suspects, of course. You've got Mitch McConnell, Glitch McConnell. You've got Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. They're considered the obvious votes against Kennedy in any nomination. They voted against Hegseth last week. That's when Vance had to come in and break the tie. A big issue here with RFK Jr. is his stance for abortion rights and his push to shake up NIH, NAIAD, CDC, okay, the whole biomedical research, the funding, and all of this in the U.S. right now. That's where that and his anti-abortion stance, his pro-life stance. That's the issue with that. And Eric Tech, you don't have to, if you don't have Carolyn, you do. Folks, listen to a minute or two of this. Tell me this Carolyn Kennedy. You might recall her as a little girl in the pictures with JFK and John, and what a beautiful family. But what the hell happened here? If you can play a few minute and a half of this or so, listen to this. This is crazy. Go ahead.
Dear senators, throughout the past year, people have asked for my thoughts about my cousin, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his presidential campaign. I did not comment, not only because I was serving in a government position as United States Ambassador to Australia, but because I have never wanted to speak publicly about my family members and their challenges. We are a close generation of 28 cousins who have been through a lot together. We know how hard it's been, and we are always there for each other. But now that Bobby has been nominated by President Trump to be Secretary of Health and Human Services, a position that would put him in charge of the health of the American people, I feel an obligation to speak out. Overseeing the FDA, the NIH, the CDC, and Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, agencies that are charged with protecting the most vulnerable among us, is an enormous responsibility and one that Bobby is unqualified to fill. He lacks any relevant government, financial, management, or medical experience. His views on vaccines are dangerous and willfully misinformed. These facts alone should be disqualifying. But he has personal qualities related to this job, which for me pose even greater concern. I've known Bobby my whole life. We grew up together. It's no surprise that he keeps birds of prey as pets, because Bobby himself is a predator. He's always been charismatic, able to attract others through the strength of his personality, his willingness to take risks and break the rules. I watch his younger brothers and cousins follow him down the path of drug addiction. His basement, his garage, his dorm room were always the center of the action, where drugs were available, and he enjoyed showing off how he put baby chickens and mice in a blender to feed to his hawks. It was often a perverse scene of despair and violence.
All right.
That was a long time ago. And
that's enough. Seriously? All right. Eric, you got anything to say about that? I mean, any thoughts?
The glasses say it all.
Why did they all look like that? And again, I don't mean to be disparaging about people's appearances. I really don't. But there's a quality, and I've seen this in investigations, that there's a quality with people in appearance, whether it's the eyes or different facial features, tics and movements. It's incredible to me that 99% of the time when you're talking with someone, you could identify them. And even the choice of glasses as I'm adjusting mine. Yeah. Okay. It's, I don't know. But the fact is, okay, yeah, when you have birds of prey, when you raise falcons, for example, or name the animal, and it's there it is. Look at that. What do you say to that? I mean, again, is that a fashion statement? Maybe it is. But there's always that look there. I can't describe it any further. And again, I don't want to be disparaging, but there it is. And thank you for that, Eric the Tech. I'm going to have nightmares now. But when you have certain animals, keep it up. When you have certain animals, obviously you have to feed them certain things. And, you know, it's almost like, well, they were alive when they put them in. No. And you've got to prepare their food a certain way. So, you know, it's as if that's like, you're killing me, man. You're killing me. Folks, you don't know what you're missing. If you're not watching this live on Rumble or X, you don't know what you're missing. Oh, my gosh. All right. One more thing, or a couple more things. Nancy Pelosi has been out of the news for a while, but I want to just touch on Nancy Pelosi for a moment, because you're going to be hearing more about Nancy Pelosi. Why do you say that? Why? Because she's going to be coming out and making some endorsements and doing some things. I think they're going to be newsworthy, and just give it a week. Give it 10 days, but you watch. And a lot of people don't know the history behind Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi has numerous connections to communists. Did you know that? I mean, flat out, absolute communist connections. Now, she's been in Congress since 1987, and I'm looking at my notes, so I apologize. But she was born in 1940. So that makes her what, 84? No, 85? The hell, yeah, 85. And her father, Thomas D'Alessandro, I'm sorry, he was a Baltimore mayor and a staunch New Deal Democrat. Now, this is how she was brought up. And Pelosi earned her bachelor's degree in political science back in 62, married Paul Pelosi in 63. They had five kids in a period of 6 years. I'm just giving you some background on Pelosi. And moved from New York to San Francisco, where Pelosi started working as a volunteer Democrat organizer. Does this sound familiar? Didn't someone else work as a community organizer? I can hear it now. That's right. Obama. Okay. She had numerous various connections on the Democrat Party, the far left of the Democratic Party. Now, it's interesting because as a former Speaker of the House, Pelosi did not serve on committees except for the House Democratic Steering Committee and the Policy Committee, which she chaired since 2003. But And why is that important? Because how did she get to the speaker's position bypassing the rite of passage to that position? She is associated with numerous caucuses and has been. The California Democratic Congressional Delegation, the Congressional Caucus for Women's Issues, the Democratic Women's Caucus, the House Democratic Caucus. And she's the founder and chair of the House Task Force on, get this, election reform. Now, why do I bring this up? Because when you look at her background, she spent many of her early years in politics very close to and in the orbit of the Communist Party USA. Did you know this? Nancy Pelosi, Communist Party USA, and of course the fellow travelers within. Why am I bringing this up now? Again, watch the news. You're going to see her in the news soon. Pelosi worked her way up in the Democrat Party very quickly, and then I'm going to move on. But she hooked up with a guy by the name of Philip Burton. Now, Philip Burton was a fixture in San Francisco and a very well-known far-left kind of guy. Now, I don't want, again, folks, I'm not trying to, like, I don't want you to feel like you're in school here, okay? I'm just giving you some information. Philip Burton, when he returned to San Francisco after World War II, he began working very closely with the left, with the Democrats, and former Communist Party USA member by the name of Bert Coffey and Dr. Carlton Goodlett. And Goodlett was a black physician at the time. He was also a publisher and a longtime Communist Party USA supporter. And Burton and Goodlett worked closely together in the NAACP and the Young Democrats. Now, again, I'm getting to a point here. Hang on just one second. Going through all of this. She also, along with Burton and others, along with Willie Brown, who is heavily associated with Kamala Harris, right? And so Willie Brown, Pelosi, the Burtons, the Communist Party, USA fellow travelers, they all hung together and were part of what became known as the Burton Machine. John Burton was a congressman, longtime serving chairman of the California Democratic Party. Okay, now, Willie Brown, again, the, what would you call him? The male benefactor of Kamala Harris, pre-Montel Williams, was a big fixture.
Bad. Leroy Brown.
If only. But no, this is absolutely incredible. And the paths, and this is the other thing too, the reason for Pelosi going to be in the, being in the news. You're going to hear more about Kamala Harris as well. And Harris and Pelosi, okay, were joined at the hip by way of associates in the Communist Party USA. I would grab my other notepad here if I could find it, but you get the idea. The Communist Party USA and Pelosi together, and just watch, you're going to hear more about this in the coming days. All right, it seems like I'm kind of all over the place, and if you think I am, it's because I am, and I want to get a lot of stuff in here. One thing that you may not know, and the people in North Carolina listening to this, Tom Tillis, the Republican Senator Tom Tillis, he was the guy, and hopefully, and I don't know how many people have heard this or not, but the Wall Street Journal today revealed that Tom Tillis, the GOP senator from North Carolina, was behind helping Pete Hegseth's former sister-in-law get that 11th hour affidavit with allegations of abuse to the senators before the confirmation vote. Did you know that? I wanted to get that out there because I think that's a big piece of information. A lot of these people are not who you think they are. A couple of other things as we go through this. President Trump today said it was his great honor to sign an executive order banning chemical castration and medical mutilation of innocent children in the U.S. Did you happen to see this? Donald Trump posted on Truth Social, and I'm going to read this verbatim. I didn't send this in to Eric the Tech, so folks, don't worry about it. It's just out there. He wrote today at 8:21 p.m. today. He said, today was my great honor to sign an executive order banning the chemical castration and medical mutilation of innocent children in the U.S. Our nation will no longer fund, sponsor, promote, assist, or support so-called gender-affirming care, which has already ruined far too many precious lives. Think about the impact this will have. Those are my words now. And he continues, my order directs agencies to use every available means to cut off federal financial participation in institutions which seek to provide these barbaric medical procedures that should have never allowed been allowed to take place. So think about that. And I believe that this is a great step in the fight against this perversion. This is one of the best things that President Trump can do. And do you think he's going to get blowback from it? Absolutely. All right. Before we run out of time, I want to show this clip. This is from last week. This is Laura Logan. And I had talked about this last week in case you missed it. Laura Logan with Steve Bannon talking about a specific case, a specific J6 case, as well as the show of J6. I sent Eric the Tech, I sent you this as video 8. I don't know if you got that or not. Did you happen to get that?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Just play a few moments or a few minutes of this, because Laura Logan, again, a friend of mine, a friend of the show, she's been on the show before, going to ask her to come back. And for the people joining me that didn't hear the announcement earlier today, J.J. Carroll is going to be on. Of course, he's the author of Invaded. He's a former Border Patrol agent, retired after 24 years because of Biden's policies, and he's going to be spilling the beans. So be sure to tune in tomorrow. But this is Laura Logan with Steve Bannon. We'll play a couple of minutes of this. With this being a long format show, I enjoy the ability to provide the context, from the intro to the conclusion, as opposed to snippets. So this is, although this is 28 minutes long, we're not going to play 28 minutes, but just a few minutes to give you some information. And she's on fire too about this. And she is talking about the J6ers and about the injustice, what can be done in this clip toward the end, what they can do. And what some are planning on doing. And don't forget, there's a $50 billion lawsuit by some of the J6 defendants against the Department of Justice. I don't know how many people know that. The mainstream media is trying to hide that, but $50 billion civil case against the Department of Justice. Okay, they're going after a judgment for $50 billion. It's absolutely incredible. So with that in mind, take a listen to this about one specific J6 case. A decorated military veteran here in the U.S., as well as the entire J6 sham committee. Again, important to know, because more will be coming out about the J6 committee. Here it is.
The great Laura Logan joins us. Tell me about Jeremy Brown. Why is this guy so important? Why there are a couple of guys there? They're released. The judge is slow walking, and then they want to either throw him back in jail. Or guys like Brown don't think they want to release at all. Why is he so important? I thought he was a revered veteran, ma'am.
Well, he is a revered veteran, decorated war hero, who was a Green Beret and who spent many years serving this country in special operations. And Jeremy Brown, you know, is an interesting case because in December, before January 6th ever took place, he had just joined the Oath Keepers. You know, he wanted to maintain the oath that he made when he put on that uniform. And he had been there for like 2 weeks, and two JTTF agents show up at his door, and they want to talk to him. Basically, they want him to snitch on the Oath Keepers. And Jeremy Brown is not a snitch, right? And also, he's a guy, he worked with JTTF all over the world when he was deployed. He knows how this is done. He knows when you're working someone, right? And he says to them, I'm going to record this with your permission. They say, okay. What they didn't expect was that he would release that recording. And why is that so significant, Steve? Because that recording is evidence of the setup of how Homeland Security and JTTF and other elements of the administration were already working to set up people like Stuart Rhodes from the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and others, trying to get their fellow Americans to snitch on them. And we still don't have the full picture on how many snitches actually there were that day who weren't just observing, but were at times orchestrating the violence, inciting the violence, pushing people to go ahead and so on. And what Jeremy Brown did was what really made them upset, because he took that evidence of a setup and he made it public. And then, lo and behold, this guy who went to the Capitol, who was never accused of violence, who never went inside the building. He was doing security for a VIP who was basically, there was a woman who was speaking and her mother was attending the rally. She was an elderly lady. She needed someone to look after her. So that's what Jeremy Brown did. He looked after an old lady. Okay. And he didn't get into anything with anyone. They came after him on misdemeanor charges, raided his house, which is now a familiar pattern with January 6th defendants, which is a violation of their constitutional rights, because you come storming into their house without just cause. This is illegal search and seizure. And they used those two misdemeanors to do a search and turn up weapons that quite, and, you know, claims of classified documents that were obviously planted. I say obviously planted because, number one, they resisted doing forensic evidence, testing. And when they were forced to, they found that there was no DNA on these grenades and things that matched Jeremy Brown or any of the carpet fibers from his house or trailer or pets and so on and so on. And also, you know, Steve, you know this, right, having been a military man. When the United States government deals in with weapons and soldiers, you have to be accountable even for the shell casings of the bullets that you fire. You remove something, you know, they know who took it, and you are responsible for checking it back in. These grenades were traced back to a facility that I can't say, but where there was no record of them ever having been stolen. If Jeremy Brown had stolen them and had them in his possession, the government would have had a record of that. Not only that, they had been used in parts of the world. They had been taken out and checked back in, you know, for use in parts of the world that where Jeremy had never served. He had no connection to the so-called evidence. The classified documents turned out to be a template. So basically, this is something that happened to another January 6th defendant, Benjamin Martin, okay, where they used misdemeanor charges as a pretext to do a search and seizure and then look for something to pin on you. And Jeremy Brown, actually, you can listen to that recorded. It's on whoisjeremybrown.com. He also wrote a letter that he read for the American people on the very first day of the January 6th Select Committee charade. And if you can find that online, it's one of the most moving things that you will ever listen to hear Jeremy Brown talking about, you know, what was really required of all of us in that moment, of how they stood for the Republic and stood for the Constitution and those principles, and how this charade that was being presented to the people was an abject lie. And at the end, you know, he uses something, Steve, he cites his prison number. And for anyone who's had anything to do with the military, if you ever did CS training, if you went through, you know, the Q courses, the Green Beret, you know, that is something that we as the United States teach our soldiers to give those, you know, to give that message and that number to people so they know how to find you. It's really a cry for help, you know, for everyone in the community who understands what that means. There is a saying in the United States military that there's no man left behind. But Jeremy Brown has been left behind. And when I went and interviewed him in prison, you know, he said to me, I said, you could be here for a long time, Jeremy. And he said, I'll be here for as long as the American people leave me here. Well, President Donald Trump promised Jeremy Brown's mother.
Okay. Yeah, if you can pause that for a while. Retired U.S. Army Special Forces Master Sergeant Jeremy Brown is still in jail today, despite receiving a pardon for January 6th. I think what everyone should probably understand is because of Jeremy Brown's refusal to be a confidential informant against the Oath Keepers or anyone else for that matter, he was punished. And as Laura Logan just does a fantastic job in summarizing this, he was set up. Now, again, he received a pardon for January 6th. But what happened in the meantime was he was caught. Well, not in the meantime, as a result of him not becoming a confidential human source, They mean the Department of Justice, Biden's Department of Justice, wanted to make an example of him. So they served him with search warrants and so on. And supposedly he had classified documents. Well, the classified documents had nothing to do He had nothing to do with any of the documents. So it was obvious, and I don't say this lightly, it was obvious that they were planted there, much like what we saw at Mar-a-Lago. Okay. Again, the same templates, the same people, and it's the same people within the DOJ that are being fired on a wholesale level now, thankfully. But he's a resident of Tampa. He was sentenced to 7 years on weapons charges, and he's still in prison right now. The argument being made for his release, his other crimes only came to light through the course of the J6 investigations. Let me, now this is from the Tampa Bay newspaper, but let me be a little bit more accurate on this. His other crimes were not crimes at all, at least not that he committed. And even if, let's say, even if he was guilty of those, which I don't believe based on evidence that he is or was, it would be fruit of the poisonous tree. And none of this should hold because of the pardon for the predicate crime. Hopefully that made sense to everyone. But they are trying to make an example out of this man. Again, this is a highly decorated, master sergeant in the U.S. Army Special Forces. And they're not going to break him. But as we saw, you and I saw the prisoners walk free following the pardons by President Trump. Brown, who's 50 years old, was transferred from a Washington, D.C. jail to the Grayson County Detention Center in Kentucky. Why? We don't know. No one knows. No one said a word about this. A jury, and this is a D.C. jury, convicted Brown on charges of possessing an unregistered sawed-off shotgun, a short-barreled rifle, and some other material. Federal agents said they found them at his Florida property while serving a search warrant related to January 6th. And notably, his ties to the Oath Keepers, which they described both publicly and in court records as a paramilitary extremist group that breached the Capitol on January 6th. He was charged with two misdemeanors for the January 6th protest, where he was photographed. He had a protective helmet on and what appeared to be military gear, but it basically a decked out Carhartt. Now, those charges were dropped right after the president's pardon. None of the other charges were. And I should add this, and then because I know we're getting short on time. A memo prepared by one of Jeremy Brown's attorneys, the heading was Free Jeremy Brown, argues that the pardon should apply to Brown's federal convictions for the crimes in Florida because they're 100% J6 related. And in a normal situation, they would be. But they're not in this case. So we have to make noise about this. You know, it's important what Laura Logan said. Leave no man behind. No man should be left behind. Leave no man behind. In this case, just because the majority of the J6 prisoners have been freed, we can't forget about Jeremy Brown and anyone else still stuck in the system. I'm telling you, this is perhaps one of the worst cases of setting up a person for crimes they did not commit. And to do this to a decorated special forces military veteran is unforgivable. I'm not going to get any further into it, except that the fight is still on. And what the investigators said they found don't match up with the they're just, it would be like somebody coming into the studio and finding a I'll just say a kilo of Coke or something like that. It would make no sense. It just doesn't make any sense. They come in looking for papers regarding, oh, I don't know, our investigation in the butler, but they find a kilo of Coke and they look at this. No. That's why this is so critical for people. I think it's really important for people to understand. So Jeremy Brown, please keep him in your prayers. Also follow the case. Make sure that we can't forget about Jeremy Brown. As of this hour, Dick Durbin is trying to smear Kash Patel. Dick Durbin does not want to see Kash Patel in office as the head of the FBI. Senator Dick Durbin is also trying to get other senators to vote against his nomination. This is absolutely incredible. Lastly, on the press conference today, I don't know how many people saw that press conference, but it's a new day in this country with the media, with the new media, and with the outgoing media. And you know, I've been in the press conference room, and it's small. It stinks. People are on top of one another. I wouldn't want to do that job for anything in the world. But I'm telling you right now, it's changing. I do believe that we're going to see more people, more entities like Breitbart, like Real America's Voice, like Natalie Winters from War Room, people like that in the press room, which I think will have a net positive impact on the. It's going to be a different. It's going to have a different feel to it. The press conferences are. In a word, you had last 4 years, Karine Jean-Pierre come out with a binder and really not answer anything. Now you're going to have better questions, better quality questions. You're going to have better quality answers, and you're going to have a different kind of environment. The reason I bring this up as a kind of a closing comment is because when I see this, when I look at this, when I saw this press conference today, I saw it live and I watched it again, I just felt very proud of the impact that you as this audience made, that audiences like this made, and collectively we've made. And I think this is starting to show, whether it be, as I mentioned, this the press conference having a new feel to it, to the border having a new feel to it, to pretty much everything having a new feel to it. Folks, I'm very optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic, but still optimistic nonetheless, that we are going to win in the immediate term. It's not going to be easy. There are still people out to get President Trump. There are still people out to get you and I, MAGA. There are still people out to cancel us. But you know what? I feel like we have a better sense of, I feel better about things. That's my two cents. That's my evaluation of things. I don't know if you feel the same way. And you can leave a comment on Rumble, and I would urge you to do that as well. I appreciate you being a part of the chat. I really do, from the bottom of my heart. Everyone who signed into the chat, who was a part of this show, thank you so much. Even if you didn't pay attention, even if you talked amongst yourselves, that's fine. But please, folks, as we head forward, like tomorrow, J.J. Carroll, I'm going to tell you something. The guy is going, he's going to knock your socks off. You got to tune in tomorrow. And moving forward, you're going to see people that are really making a difference. And we're going to give them the platform and just let them go. And I'm going to ask Laura, as a matter of fact, hopefully she'll come on, if not next week, the week after, and some other people like that. So it's up to you. You tune in. I'll put the guests on. We'll have the shows. I'll turn up, give you the information, and we'll all learn together and be informed together. in a positive way. Eric the Tech, you got any closing comments? Come on, you can do it. Come on.
Good show tonight.
Yeah, thanks. It was because of you, too. One more soundbite. Come on. Spin the wheel. Pick a soundbite. All right. Here it comes. I can tell he's digging. This ought to be good.
Don't be rude.
Oh, that's what I get.